This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, you've probably heard of Athletic Greens from 1,000 different podcasts, and the reason why I believe is because it works. This is something I've been using every single day, and the biggest things that I've realized for myself is that I have more energy, I rarely if ever get sick, my poops are better, okay? There's multiple benefits here, and if you are interested in trying it, I have a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 AG1 travel packs by using the link drinkag1.com/Farzad. And my gut tells me, no pun intended, that you're going to love this product. Now onto the podcast. All right. So we got Michael Dunn here with us today. Michael, I'm going to have him do a brief introduction here after I tee up the question for y'all. But one of the things we've been talking about a lot on the channel is really trying to get our heads wrapped around where the auto industry is going. Where is autonomous technology going? One of the biggest players in the world that doesn't get talked about enough, especially in the United States, is China. And now that we see this massive shift with companies like Tesla, you got companies like Baidu, you got companies all over China trying to get into self-driving technology, we're all sitting here like, okay, we don't see them here in the United States. What is going on, right? And so we have Michael here to give us a really good insight into what that picture could look like here very, very shortly. So give us a little bit of insight into your background, Michael, where you've been in the last few months here to try and understand the space, and then we'll just get real nerdy. So I'll hand over the microphone to you, sir.
Tremendous. Thank you so much, number one, for having me today. I've been looking forward to this conversation for months, and here we are. Some context. I run a company called Dunn Insights, and we advise investors, automakers, and suppliers on the future of cars, specifically electric, batteries, and autonomous. Where's it going? And people want to talk to us, talk to me in particular, because I lived and worked in Asia for 26 years. Half of that time in China, the other half in Thailand and Indonesia. So Asia's my second home. I studied Chinese, I studied Thai, I speak and write both of them. And so I feel as though I'm one of those people born in Detroit, lived in Asia, and speak the language. Okay, maybe I can bring some value to what people want to know these days. That's what I'm sensing. So I've been traveling around the world, Europe, United States, and Asia, and everybody's question is, what's this giant automotive machine coming out of China look like? How big, how bad, how soon? And in particular, where is it with regards to autonomous vehicles? Is it ahead of the United States, even with, or catching up quickly? Yeah. So I stopped there. That's basically
perfect.
Yeah.
No, dude, we're not used to having a very polished professional person on the podcast. I love it. Okay. So then one of the things we were talking about before that awesome introduction is, so help me understand exactly the China, let's call it the problem, like from a United States perspective, right? You're from Detroit. We know Detroit is home to America's pride and joy, you know, Ford, GM, Stellantis kind of, right? European company now. But now we have this behemoth that has very much been growing almost silently in the United States because we don't have exposure to those companies here. We don't see them on the road. So help us really understand why this is such a big deal. Why so few people are talking about it in America? What are the variables that are driving that growth? And then what I really am keen on, so this is kind of give you a little bit of maybe insight into how I'm thinking about it, is self-driving technology is only going to supercharge whatever's happening here, right? Because the forcing function is going to be lowest cost per mile. And so if you have a system or a country that's able to capitalize on that and then slap self-driving on top of it, then you've supercharged this movement away from what we have today towards a potentially an all Chinese future, right? Sans Tesla, hopefully, as an American, you know, proud American citizen. I want an American company to win. So yeah, let's turn that into a conversation and see where it goes.
So let me start by just saying, you know, I'm probably not the first person to notice this, but the first time I saw Elon talk about August 8th, 2024, my mind went immediately to 8-8, because those are powerful numbers in Chinese culture. 8 means to prosper, to flourish. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happening, that event on August 8th, is centered in China. Yeah.
Interesting.
Fa, ba, ba is how you say 8 in China. And when you say ba to Chinese people, they already get excited. There's money. there's something happening. Okay.
I know what to say the second I land in China.
Yeah. Ba, fa, flourishing, wealthy, you know, you hit gold. All right. So that's just an aside, but bigger picture, if we step back and think about things, for the last 20, most of the last 25, 30 years, when we thought about China, we thought about global automakers going into the China market to manufacture cars in partnership with Chinese and to sell into the China market. It was in China for China, full stop. And the question was, who would take the most market share and who would make the most profits? And for years, it was just, as the executive GM used to say, it was a profit machine. We were making more money than God. So everyone's happy to go to China and sell their cars. However, that changed 180 degrees starting about 3 years ago when the market in China slowed dramatically, margins fell off a cliff, and everybody inside China goes, oh my God, to survive, we have to go global. So the game has changed completely from focus on selling into China to manufacturing in China for the world. And many people listening today will know already, but it's worth repeating, China's the number one exporter of cars in the world, surpassed Japan last year, export to more than 100 countries worldwide. And it's not just on price. They have high quality vehicles at low cost, advanced technology for your digital cockpit, and now arriving at your point about autonomous vehicles, doing exceptional work in the autonomy field. Why? How did they get here? Why did that happen? Well, one was the change in the market. The other one was this thing called Made in China 2025. Xi Jinping, leader of China, and his lieutenants 10 years ago said, how do we no longer play catch up with the West, but surpass the West? We have to identify a few technologies of the future that we will lead in. One was electrics and batteries. Another one was autonomous vehicles. So this isn't just last couple of years. This has been a 10-year project with billions of dollars thrown at it. And here we are with today, the Chinese right there with the best in the world when it comes to autonomy. That's what we're looking at.
Very interesting. So as somebody who's, so one of my struggles in understanding the sort of the Chinese technology around, let's start with autonomous vehicles specifically, is that it seems very difficult to really know what's going on unless you're there. Right. Because it's and I'm not, you know, I'm not calling them shady or nothing. It's just hard because you're not, you know, we're not there and they're not here. So it's like all I have to go off of is, you know, analyst reports and stuff. And sometimes they're not even there. So it's like, OK, you're basically doing the work I'm doing. I'm trying to piece together things. But you've been there a long, long time. I believe you've been there as recently as what, a couple months ago, Michael?
Yes.
Have you been there recently? OK, so. So you see it, you see it. So help me understand what, you know, and what I'm trying to get to is, we know Tesla is approaching self-driving technology very differently from everybody else, it seems like. They're using 8 cameras, so vision only, with an inference computer on board, and they're using, let's call it, a quasi-artificial intelligence at the headquarters to just drive the car like a human would using intelligence of sorts. Whereas there are other companies out there, like I'll use Waymo as an example, that are much more traditional in their approach, and they're trying to use a host of different sensors, ultrasonics, LiDAR, vision, blah, blah, blah. And then they're also doing HD maps and a host of other techniques. Mm-hmm. I call it brute force self-driving because mm-hmm. you can't get it to work, and it's a proven model. But the complexity is the amount of parts, the amount of costs, and the difficulty of scaling that technology versus getting vision only to work. Okay, so help me understand, what does that dynamic look like in China? Is it mostly the Waymo route versus the Tesla route? Is scalability going to be a challenge for the Chinese? Help me understand that a little bit better.
All right, so great insights into the murkiness and the opacity of China. So some, if it makes us all feel a little bit better, even when you're inside China and even when you're Chinese, it's hard to figure out what's going on because information isn't widely shared. You know, they built this massive thing called the Great Wall like centuries ago. That wasn't by mistake. That's the Chinese. Like, walls are good. Let's keep everyone else sort of guessing what we're doing.
It's very much cultural, right? The way that they think.
Very cultural. My simple example is in America, if we see a door that's half open, we just open it up. With the Chinese, if you see a door, let's close that thing quickly. Close it. So walls. All right. You're exactly right. The Chinese, whether it's Baidu or there's a handful of other ones, but let's focus on Baidu, sort of the Waymo. They're all going the conventional Waymo route with the LiDAR and all the other technologies you mentioned. Where it gets interesting is that China tried to get on track with electric starting in 2014, but really didn't get traction until Tesla entered the market in 2020 and started manufacturing there, bringing their suppliers there. And then that's when we saw a takeoff in demand for electrics. Guess what? Here we go. The Chinese have been making incremental improvements in their deployment of autonomous vehicles. But earlier this year, suddenly, whoa, wait a second, Tesla's been approved at the highest levels of the government to qualify for national security clearance and for now testing some robo-taxis in Shanghai. No other global automaker's gotten that. Tesla's inside. So my read on it is China's saying, we may have it right going the Waymo route, but we would be dummies not to get Tesla in here and see if maybe Tesla's the one that has the answer, just like they're the leaders in electric. So very interesting time right now where maybe once more China will use Tesla to enhance its own industry. Because once Tesla brings that technology, it spreads quickly inside China.
So that's a very interesting insight, because what that tells me is that China doesn't seem very stubborn around the technologies that are needed to achieve their goal, right? They're like, so if we use the Tesla sort of thing as an example, the Tesla's ability to ramp to whatever it was, 500,000 units by 2021, I think it was, which, you know, as an automaker, when you do that, like you said, you have to bring a supply chain with you. And so once you have the supply chain ramped up, then anybody else can really, as long as, you know, I mean, right. I would assume, I don't know why they wouldn't be allowed to plug in, but anybody else can plug in. And then you have this flywheel effect where the bigger the supply chain gets, the more everyone else wins, right? So more players come in, everybody else wins, right? But This also applies to self-driving technology and really probably any other technology, right? China is not, you know, is not afraid to use the best methods, you know, like the methods that actually will win in the market. And so a vision-only approach with an inference computer and training at a headquarters with NVIDIA chips or China-made chips, whatever that may be, could very well be where we end up. Have you seen any clues around this? Like, is there actual hard data out there that tells us that this is actually happening?
It's so early. I'd love to tell you that I have some evidence, but it's still happening in real time. I think we'll know a lot more August 8th. Keep an eye on that date again. The other thing to mention is there is an interesting development between Geely, which is, you know, after BYD, Geely is probably number two overall private company, owns Volvo, owns Polestar. They have designed, developed a custom-built vehicle for delivery to Waymo for deployment here in the United States. So this is not an example of them transferring their autonomous technology, but Waymo making use of very low-cost manufacturing of a quality vehicle designed in Sweden. So you can kind of see different ways in which China will make use of and U.S. will make use of each other as they're pursuing different routes. One other important difference is to think about. If we think about autonomous technologies as a race toward commercialization, China enjoys some decisive advantages. The most important of these is that regulators are there in place in China to make sure this accelerates and happens. Whereas regulators in the United States are almost going the other direction, saying, no mistakes allowed, let's pause, let's halt, restart. China's full on, regulators at the locals, city, provincial, national level want success, and they're paving the way for that success to happen. So put simply, America's still the best at inventing and innovating. China's the best at commercializing, taking it to market. And this is where China has a big edge in autonomy.
And that's like, as somebody who wants American industry to succeed, this sounds like a very difficult situation to be in. Because the dynamic you just described outside of the U.S., which we kind of saw already, putting some sort of artificial barriers or tariffs, let's say. Like I know recently the Biden administration quadrupled the tariffs, I believe, on electric vehicles from 25% to 100% to try and slow this down, right? But it's like, okay, but what are you, but what's America doing on the flip side? Like, we're slowing it down.
Right. But like, what's the other part of the equation?
Right? Yeah. Like, so the outcome seems obvious. Like, as long as China continues, and if the United States industry, not, it can't just be Tesla, right? It has to be Tesla, it has to be GM, it has to be Ford, it has to be Rivian, it has to be Lucid, it has to be everybody. Bunch of new startups, right? The outcome feels like, you know, China will dominate the auto industry. Tesla will lead the technology. So it's kind of like an Apple and everybody else dynamic.
Yeah.
Where Apple tries to like set the what people will want, and maybe they'll hoard the profits. And then, but then everybody else is like, yeah, I'll play too, and I'll commoditize the crap out of the technology, right? Is that a good, do you think that's a good analogy for this whole thing?
Absolutely. What's missing here in the United States is that second part of the equation you just referenced. So if the United States came out and said, we're putting in tariffs in place for 3 years because we have this amazing master plan to compete with the Chinese, and here's how we're going to get it done, and all we need is 3 years and then the tariffs go away. Okay, that's reassuring. That's a confident move. Right now, it's more like, time out, tariffs, we're really behind and we're not sure what we're going to do about it. That's what's unsettling about the current situation. And the Chinese just relish that. They say, yeah, that we... Chinese look at the world and say, let's hold on. We produce 30 million cars a year. The U.S. produces about 15. So we're twice as big in terms. We produce more electric cars than the rest of the world combined already. We totally dominate the battery industry. We're the number one exporter globally. Our cost basis is 20 to 30% lower than anyone else in the world. Wow. You'd have, if that was America, you'd have a lot of confidence coming into the arena. And that's how the Chinese are feeling right now. Again, we don't see Chinese cars on American roads. That's a major head fake, or what is it called? Like, no, don't go to Mexico or go to Australia or Thailand, and you're going to see Chinese cars all over the road. And okay, this is real. This is where we are.
This is really raising geopolitical and like macro questions for me, mainly being, you know, just thinking about great power competition. That, you know, there's a saying that says that infantry wins battles, but logistics wins wars. Mm. And if, you know, we're talking about the electric vehicle technology being the main technology of the future of all transport, not just automotive, but also airplanes and ships and, you know, different types of things. And China has strategically locked up a leadership position in that technology, and that technology will perform superior to internal combustion engines in any operating environment, including battle, then how is this not, in 5 to 10 years, going to change the relative positions of power on the global stage between the U.S. and China and put the U.S. at a major disadvantage?
100%. On the current trajectory, that is going to be the outcome. It's like a Sputnik 2 moment where when the Soviets put that first satellite into space, there was panic in the United States. Oh, God, we're behind. We're the underdogs. What's missing today, back to Farzad, comment earlier, is what are we doing about this? We're getting our butts kicked along every metric. It's already apparent, but there seems to be still a complacency that reigns. Now, I shouldn't say broad brush. Tesla continues to do phenomenal work and innovation, and the Chinese respect the hell out of Elon and Tesla. But when I talk to Chinese companies and ask them about companies beyond Tesla in the West, they sort of shrug. No, there's no competition for us. So without panicking, I do think right here, right now is the time for the United States to really get a sense of urgency. Like, it's on. It's on. We are being challenged like we haven't been in 100 years. And the Chinese are fierce competitors, highly ambitious. They're not going to slow down. how do we answer this challenge coming out of China? And different from Japan and Korea in the past, some people say, well, isn't it kind of like the Japanese when they came in and they were low cost? No, those were countries that were smaller than us, less powerful than us, and ultimately subordinate to the United States. China is none of the above. China is bigger, badder, and really strong right now. So it's time for us to act.
One of the comments you made, which I was going to follow up on. So one of the things that I read, so, you know, as somebody who follows Tesla very closely, I am a Tesla investor. I've been following it since 2012, right? So it takes up way too much of my time. Let's just say that. But one of the things I'm always trying to get my head wrapped around, you know, that let's say the other side of the argument comes is like, well, China, the Chinese market is going to leave Tesla in the dust because they're very protectionist. They are not fans of Western companies. They are not fans of, brands that maybe don't align with what the Chinese population is looking for. But every time I talk to people that are actually boots on the ground, I hear the opposite. You know, one of my very good friends, who's also a Tesla employee, was just in China recently to visit his fiance's family. And overwhelmingly positive sentiment around Tesla, Elon Musk, and what they do, right? And it sounds like you've essentially confirmed that. With full confidence, we can say that Tesla is one of the saving graces of the automotive industry in China that's of a Western sort of place, right? I mean, is that a fair statement to make?
Absolutely accurate. Enormous respect for the company and for Elon Musk. And even when you talk to people from NIO or XPeng or Li Auto who are eyeing the premium segment, when you ask them about Mercedes and BMW, Audi, they're like, yeah, we can handle those guys. When you talk about Tesla, they're like, Tesla's formidable, formidable. Now that's at a commercial level, competitors. The worrying part as a Tesla investor or a Tesla fan is that China does have a track record of systematically inviting the very best technology companies in the world into China for the express purpose of China learning what it needs to learn and eventually showing those companies the exit. It's just very consistent over the last 20 to 25 years. GM's a great example of that. Used to be the poster child for US-China relations. Today, GM sales in China are down by more than 50% from their peak. Their profits are down even further. GM is on its way out the door in China. And so it would be hard to believe that would be true today, 10 years ago. But it's true. So today, Tesla's in very good shape. But let's not be naive about what could be happening 5 or 10 years from now.
So I'm very happy you brought that up. What was the dynamic that allowed that to happen? Was it China's technological prowess and manufacturing capability surpassing or matching that of GM's, where they found like GM no longer offered them something of value? Was it a souring relationship between the leadership? What was it?
Couple things going on at the same time, so it's hard to weigh it, but definitely the turning point was GM had peak sales in 2017, 4 million cars a year, big market, big profits. Two things happened since then. Relationship with the United States politically has gone south in a hurry. You know, in Henry Kissinger's own words, you know, we're in a Cold War with China. By the time before he died, we're in a Cold War. So things have shifted south. And when that happens, the party, the Communist Party in China, will shape outcomes, commercial outcomes in the market, indirectly, indirectly. So that one thing, there's this big cloud, geopolitical cloud over GM and American companies generally, Tesla's being a little bit of an exception. The second thing, and probably more important one, is China invited global automakers into the country 20, 25 years ago to form joint ventures and transfer technology. And it just happens that much of that technology was transferred and China made it a goal to lead in batteries and battery electric cars. So the joint ventures like GM, like Ford, like Volkswagen, who for years commanded enormous respect, Chinese customers love global brands, we're kind of lulled into a sense of complacency. This is great. We can count on Chinese demand forever. So when we started to see electrics take off, GM and others were very slow to react, saying, boy, this doesn't look familiar and it won't last. This looks so different from the last 25 years. We can count on this being sort of a fleeting moment and we'll come back to people loving Buicks again. But that isn't how it played out. Yeah.
I guess, would you say that GM and the rest of these legacy auto brands lost the value added proposition to China because they did not take a leadership position that aligned with China's long-term strategic goals?
That's right. And that's where Tesla is totally aligned. Yeah. The other thing, in fairness to the global automakers, is that they do, as mandated, they had to form joint ventures with Chinese partners. And those Chinese partners may or may not feel an urgency to help GM see the light. It's like, okay, you guys are not getting the memo. Okay, we're not getting the memo. We're going to develop our own products. And your use for your, what do they call it when you go to this grocery store and they have that by date?
Expiration?
Yeah, expiration. Your use by such and such date coming up pretty soon because we've kind of learned everything we need to learn from you. So, yeah, both of those. Whereas Tesla continues to innovate, continues to surprise on the upside, continues to impress the Chinese.
So that's a very interesting point because the continuing innovation and ensuring, you know, from if I'm Elon Musk and I try to, you know, navigate Tesla through China, which I never want to do in 1,000 years, but I'm going to try just for this, you know, little podcast. Yeah. It is incredibly important for me to ensure that the technology, if I want to be successful in China and I want to ensure that I can thrive in China and I have access to what's right now and could be for the next 5 to 10 years, the lowest cost available to me to produce electric vehicles and self-driving vehicles long-term potentially, I need to ensure that I don't do something that creates an environment where the Communist Party decides that they no longer find me useful. And then to your point, they'll create some sort of environment where magically I become irrelevant over time. And the only way to protect myself against that is to ensure that I always have something of value that they don't have, that I have, that they want from me. And that's going to enable us to play together, right? Is that fair?
That's exactly what's going on. It's a leverage game. The Chinese are always, I've been in countless hundreds of negotiations with the Chinese across the table. They're always focused on one thing. How much leverage do you have? How much do I have? And as soon as they sense that there's softness on the other side, they're going to double down and say, we got this. And there's the door. Thanks for coming. So Elon's super aware of that. And that's one of the reasons why we see him making this visit to China and lobbying very hard. We're investing in China. We're innovating. We're hiring for original engineering here. We're doing great things for China. The Chinese are like, if for him to meet Li Qiang, the number two guy in China, woo, that's powerful. No other CEO gets those kinds of meetings. So they're in good shape. Elon, no one else could probably navigate China like Elon does because he just knows what he's doing.
And so how important is that relationship within the context of Tesla being a 100% wholly owned private company in China? Talk about that a little bit.
Right. So when they came in, a little bit of history here. Up until then, you'll remember that every foreign automaker that went into China was required by Chinese law to form a joint venture partnership with a Chinese company. And that Chinese company would own 50% or more. That was like an ironclad law that was not going to change. And along comes Tesla, negotiated very smartly and said, we understand China wants to be the world leader in electrics. We'll come in, but we want 100% ownership. We want low interest loans from the state banks. And we want to have this happen very quickly. And the Chinese understood and said, yep, we'll make an exception for you. You have 100% ownership here. And up until today, that's still the case. So the only ones in the market with 100% ownership. A really good position because he can control. He doesn't have that joint venture partner that he has to talk to about everything. He's just running his business. One thing I'm watching, of course, is the elections coming up and the relationship between China and the U.S. And at a moment's notice, we cannot be surprised if China suddenly says, you know what, American companies generally not in favor here, out. Or let's just diminish your... Farzad, you mentioned something like how that happens, you know. So what I saw in China, they don't say, your time's up, get out. They just start to make life more difficult for you. So, for example, you want to renew your license for your factory, which is an annual thing. It comes up, oh, it's automatic. We've had the factory here. We're going to renew it. Oh, tough this year. Tough to renew it. And if you don't have the license, I'm sorry, production can't go forward. But we're working on things, but it's going to be slow. And that's how the Chinese do it.
That's not surprising. Not surprising. So what does this mean? This is okay. So I'm going to ask a question that, you know, I've brought this up, you know, this point on my channel many times. And every time I bring it up, you know, people that follow the automotive space closely, but not the electric vehicle space closely, usually what I get is, you crazy EV fanboy, what are you talking about? Get your head out of your butt, right? But it very much sounds like the dynamic for the next 5 to 10 years is that, forget Detroit. If you're a legacy automaker that doesn't have an electric vehicle supply chain based in China, you will die. Is that hyperbole?
That is reality. That's reality today. And we look in the United States, where is our supply chain for electric cars? The cupboard's basically empty. How do we compete? We're so much more expensive than China is. And it's like, yeah. So then global automakers, including, get this, Toyota, you may have heard this, but Toyota is now looking at trying to duplicate. This is a shocker to me. Toyota trying to duplicate Tesla's 100% ownership in China to build Lexus electric vehicles there. I mean, when you have Toyota, King Toyota, talking about building electric Lexuses in China, now we know the world is definitely flipped. Like, whoa, this is a new era for sure. And as you say, if you don't have the supply chains that are competitive out of China, how does one compete? How does one compete? It'd be really hard. It's like throw the walls up with tariffs, race for the next 5 to 10 years, try to put those supply chains in the United States, North America, and Europe. But we're way behind. And the Chinese are not slowing down.
So that raises the question, you know, in my mind, there's two different factors that really are at play in manufacturing these vehicles. There's all of the actual technology that goes into manufacturing the vehicle, and then there's the supply chain. You know, regardless of how vertically integrated it is, at some point you've got to get the raw materials for your batteries and all those, you know, permanent magnets for electric motors and those types of things. Mm-hmm. And China seems to have all of those pieces, whereas the rest of the world is kind of lacking. But as Tesla leans into this next manufacturing process that is based on the unboxed model, and if they pilot that here in the United States and, you know, introduce it in Mexico first, is that enough of an advantage potentially in your mind if they don't bring that to China initially to offset the lead that China has in raw materials? And can we develop a supply chain of raw materials outside of China and combine that with a lead in manufacturing technology here in the Western Hemisphere to set ourselves on a more competitive footing with China?
No reason we can't do that. We have the resources, we have the intelligence, we have the research, we have the entrepreneurship. The only element in my mind that's missing is like this sense of urgency, because we do need to close the gap. We are behind, we are the underdog. But I love your examples of the unbox, go to Mexico. And if you see, Elon would never in a million years admit this right now, but he is quietly trying to diversify outside of China. Mexico, looking at India, looking at potentially Indonesia, looking how do we rebalance? Because one of two Teslas built globally this year, right, are in China. That's a lot of leverage it gives the Chinese. So he will, on the one hand, do everything he can to stay in good graces in the Middle Kingdom, while at the same time going Mexico, unboxed, supply chains. Was in Arkansas. I'm hearing more and more processing happening in the United States. So we can do it. We have the ingredients. It's just, do we have the awareness that we're getting into the ring with this heavyweight, with some big muscles? And it's been a while since we had a challenge like this. That's the question.
Sounds like a Rocky IV kind of a storyline.
Rocky IV. Yes. Apollo.
I love it. So it sounds to me like, short of the president of the United States making some sort of executive action that says this needs to become a national focus for national security and to ensure that long term our economy is not codependent on our biggest adversary. What are the forcing functions that will allow this to happen? How are you thinking about that dynamic? How do we solve this? Like, how do we actually, what are the logistics behind solving this issue?
I'm not trying to take shots here, but I would say it would help if the President of the United States said, I'm so proud and I'm so grateful and we are so fortunate to have Tesla here at home. That's an American company. We
good luck with that.
You guys are the leaders, and Ford, GM, and Stellantis should be at your doorstep taking notes every single day. That would help a lot. Second one, by the way, while you're taking notes, why don't you really actually open your eyes to the innovation that Tesla is, the incarnation of innovation, and recognize that you have to change dramatically to be competitive. So unity in the United States, leadership, and a recognition that of the value of Tesla. I mean, if we had the Manhattan Project. If we call it the current day Manhattan Project, Tesla would be the leader. We'd all be there in New Mexico, suppliers, other automakers saying, how do we get competitive? Because they already have it. They already have it. We don't. And that's, I think, what's required. Yeah, just as you described.
Would you call it a matter of national security? I mean, would you go that far?
1,000%. 1,000%. I mean, not my words. Take the words of Xi Jinping. He said, now is the time for China to take center stage. The East, China is rising. The West is in decline. We have ambitions to set the standards for how societies are run in the future. We have a better model than the West has. I mean, he isn't hiding it. We will see Taiwan return to mainland China. He's on record many times saying this. So they're quite clear about their objectives, and we would be naive to underestimate where they want to take things.
Okay. So if something just came to my mind, and I'm going to sound like a total conspiracy theorist. So here we go. Are you ready?
Yes, let's have it.
So how much of the recent rhetoric from Elon Musk on Twitter to try and appeal more to the center right is a sort of premeditated effort to try and depoliticize electric vehicles so that something like this can actually happen? Mm. What do you think?
That would be a genius move, right?
Because, I mean, without that, I don't think that happens, right? Like, without the depolitization of electric vehicles and having someone like, you know, you say you weren't going to take shots. I'm going to take shots. I think President Biden, you know, I think the IRA has been great for the, for trying to incentivize manufacturing of electric vehicles here.
Yes.
But there's only one company really taking advantage of it, because it seems like every other company can't figure out how to make a freaking EV at a profit. Right. So it's like, okay, so you have a combination of legacy automakers for some reason just are not capable of, I think I know the reasons, but I'll keep them to myself. they're not able to make a profitable electric vehicle here. And then on the flip side, you also have this polarization of Elon Musk, of Tesla, of like, you know, that's going on, that's painting this technology as a no-no for America, right? Or as a no-no, which creates friction when you're trying to ramp up this industry that I think all three of us agree now, I don't speak for Hans, that is a matter of national security to ensure that the next generation transportation systems are built here in the United States, right? So it's like, what the hell are we doing?
Let me push back on you just a little bit, Farzad, on the IRA, because on the one hand, it has provided a lot of great incentives for Tesla, and Tesla's taking advantage of them. One of the things that is I feel like is a huge flaw in the IRA that is not talked about enough hybrids. Is the fact that it extends a runway for all of these legacy companies not to make this transition as quickly as possible by giving them a leg to stand on with hybrids.
Great and point.
Basically giving them enough rope to hang themselves on something that is not going to put us in a competitive position nationally, especially when we are talking about this topic of the national security, that, you know, it's not only transport, but warfare is moving to drones. And a lot of the same technology that is making EVs and transport of EVs very effective and cost efficient and all those things, it ports over to drones. And so this technology is very much also going to be a battlefield technology in our lack of leadership.
Yes.
You know, outside of Tesla to move into these arenas are giving China a technological advantage, not only in, you know, the logistics of transport, but also the practical warfare battle technologies that are going to shape warfare in the next 100 years. So, that's just one of the things that, as I look at this shaping up, I don't know how we get away from the fact that we need to get off of our butts and really recognize the disadvantage that we're at right now. And like you said, Michael, that, you know, we're the underdog now. We are not, if you look out 10 plus years, we are not the leaders that we think we are.
No, in particular, as a Detroiter, this is really hard for me to look at my hometown and those companies there and come to terms with the fact. I remember I was president of GM Indonesia about 10 years ago. And at that time, top leadership at Detroit made the decision. They said, hey, we're not, quote unquote, we're not making money. We're not competitive in many, many markets around the world. So we're going to withdraw. We're going to retreat from Europe, South Africa, India, Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam, Japan, Korea. They got out of it. Okay, but we're going to stay in the two most important markets. We'll stay in China and the United States because that's where we make money. It's very financially sort of financial. Where do we make profits? Now, as the president of GM Indonesia, and when I first got into the position, they were already saying, we're thinking of getting out. I said, wait a second, why? Well, because we're not making profits there. I said, well, other companies are making profits here. Maybe it's not the country market's fault. Maybe we should look in the mirror. Anyway, that was a bottom line. What's happened over time is we did withdraw and retreat from so many markets around the world, as Detroit is. Now China's going south in a hurry for the Detroit automakers. And we're left with making trucks and SUVs for North Americans, full stop. If you look at, you know, from the outer space, if you look at the Earth, and you look at the Detroit 3, they're making big vehicles for North Americans. That's it. We're not competitive anywhere else in the world. That's a big problem. So time to shift our mindset and also our technologies and say, to be around in 5 or 10 years, we better put it into gear and make this shift to electrics as soon as we possibly can. It's otherwise, as you said, they can just sit back and make, well, we're going to continue to make trucks, but we'll have hybrid trucks or plug-in hybrid trucks. Where's that going? Where's that going? How do we get competitive globally again?
Okay. I want to ask you a question since you president of GM Indonesia, and you don't have to answer it, okay? But I want to sort of ask you if this is a correct representation as to why companies like GM and Ford, but specifically GM, I think, are struggling to really make this transition. And the way I think about it is I think it's a mixture of culture, how long they've been around, and how much they're beholden to investors to ensure that beautiful dividend doesn't go away. Because the second you start making massive capex into EVs in a technology that you haven't been able to be profitable at, all of a sudden, that beautiful stock thing that a lot of these executives are getting paid with starts to tank, because you have to cut back dividends to be able to fund this, unless you raise a bunch of debt, which is going to make your already ballooning debt go even higher. So you have these like multiple variables, and I don't think this is exclusive to GM. I don't want to pick on them. I think this is a legacy auto problem.
Legacy, right? Yep.
Is that a fair? Tell me if I'm being too harsh.
No, it's accurate. If you think about it from one perspective, GM, I don't know what the final number was, but made phenomenal profits last year. So Wall Street happy, investors happy, top leadership happy with those bonuses. Along those metrics, wow, what are we doing wrong? We're great profits. Well, come on, guys. You're paid a lot of money to think beyond the narrowness of short-term profitability around trucks. Where's the world going? How do we get competitive? So I'm afraid that what you describe is exactly what's going on. It's very financially driven, not imaginative. If you ask me about my time, I had never worked in a big guy. I always started my own companies in Asia. Then I was recruited from the outside to come to GM to bring some new thinking, fresh thinking. And two things struck me immediately. One, very inward looking around we're a manufacturing company and we're focused on us. And this year's product is so much better than last year's product that every customer is going to want it. Without the mindset of, oh, the customer has enough, about 20 other choices. That didn't occur to them. So that was one big shock for me coming into it. No, it was inward looking. We're doing better than we did last year. Doesn't mean anything to the customer. And the other one was, and this is unfair because there's a lot of really smart people, very smart people at GM, but I didn't see imagination. I didn't see, or it wasn't welcome, or it didn't blossom there. Just nobody thinking imaginatively, just thinking incrementally on, well, where were we and where are we now? That's not a winning way. Yeah. Is that too harsh? Maybe.
You said a lot nicer than I did.
I think one of the factors in this that really plays a bigger part than people realize is just the rate of change. And so, you know, if you look at, we'll say, legacy auto on one side, and the fact that, you know, it takes them roughly 7 years to do a model refresh. That's a full refresh, and you know they're making some small incremental tweaks along the way. But you know, if you just average it up over the course of that entire time, maybe you're making 10 changes to a vehicle per year. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have Tesla, and they may be making 10 minor changes on a vehicle in a day.
Yes.
That's obviously radically different. Where does China land in between that spectrum? Are they able to keep up with Tesla? Are they closer to these legacies? Is that how they have caught up? And what is, because I mean, that's the derivative. That's the rate of change of where all this stuff is going. Mm-hmm. Can China basically have a fast enough rate of change to catch up to Tesla and to keep pace with them? And what does that look like from your perspective?
Okay, if we take a snapshot today, the Chinese are definitely much closer to Tesla than they are to the legacies. They move very quickly, and they're hungry. When they make a mistake, they're hungry to fix it quickly. If there's an Achilles heel or an asterisk around the Chinese, is that the Chinese, this isn't generalization, but I hear it even from my Chinese friends, they cut corners. They like to cut corners to save time and money. And up until now, they've gotten away with that. Let's wait 3 to 5 years as they try to keep up with Tesla speed. Will it backfire? That's the thing I'm watching with regards to the Chinese. Up until now, it looks like it's perfection. But anytime, look at BYD ramped from nothing to like 3-4 million in the space of a few years. I'm wondering how that can be. Maybe they've got it all nailed down, but the one thing I'm watching is the Chinese, in my years there, And this isn't even a criticism. It's just they would find ways to do things more quickly, right on the edge of cutting corners that may come back to haunt them. So, to answer your question more directly, they are very close to Tesla in terms of speed, far ahead of the legacy automakers.
Yeah. So it's becomes a question of how will Western markets tolerate some of those potential cost-cutting efforts that will impact quality significantly more than, say, a Tesla or a GM or Ford or BMW or Mercedes might be doing, right? So it's like, and it, that might be like, but it's like, I think about it, and I know we got like 2 minutes here, Michael. I want to make sure I get you out of here on time. But the way I think about it is like, how else do you find the limit unless you go really fast? And that's kind of like what Tesla has done. I think that's why Tesla is able to achieve the speed it has, is because they're not afraid to make their first 1,000 Model 3s look like they were put together with duct tape, right? It's because they know that the core technology is a differentiator, and then they'll nip and tuck as they go along, right? And I'm wondering, and it clearly worked. That strategy clearly worked, because now they have, as powerful as China is, the number one best-selling electric vehicle, period, in the world in 2023 was a Tesla Model Y, American-made, baby, right?
Yes.
Let's see how long we can keep that going for, right? That's really the key question.
100%. I love on my Tesla. This is my second one. I've had them since 2016. Love those over-the-air updates, which we as Tesla owners, we just take for granted. And it's like little gifts, birthday gifts, like coming every few weeks. Whoa. And I'm not the first one to say it, but it's still something that Tesla set the standard for. And when I visit legacy automakers, they're like, yeah, we're planning on updating like quarterly, maybe, you know, whoa, guys. Yeah, you got to pick it up. Tesla's way ahead.
Any parting words for us, Michael, before we let you go? This was so incredibly insightful. Any parting words before we have you back in the future, hopefully, if you can make time for us. We'd love to have you back.
Happy 4th of July, one day after. We're still in the afterglow of the 4th of July. Happy Independence Day. Super excited, really looking forward to August 8th to see what happens there. And whether it's here in the United States or in China or both, I'm sensing we're on the verge of a major breakthrough.
Love to hear it. Feels big. It feels very, very big and significant. That's for sure.
And most of all, thank you guys for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise.
Exactly. And if you'd love to come back after 8/8 to discuss the implications of what we've learned, I think maybe that would be a good, a good opportunity to regroup.
Tremendous. Tremendous. Love. Okay, let's do it.
Where can people find you, Michael? Done Insights. Give us your handle on X, all that good stuff.
Great. Thank you. Doneinsights.com. is the website. You can find our newsletter and our podcast. It's called Driving with Dunn. And then on X, it's Dunn_insights.
So go give him a follow, or I'm going to come to your house and drink all your beer, y'all. I'm not done yet. It's July 5th. It's not over. It's America, baby. Let's go.
Beautiful.
All right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tee up the question and then literally just free flow. Wherever your head goes, we'll jump in. Like I said, Shittier Joe Rogan. We'll make it a fun experience for all of us. Okay.
We have the whiskey and the dope.
I already took mine.
Beautiful.
Oh man, if I did, I'd be like on the floor right now.